ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the Religion and Ethics Report with me, Andrew West, on ABC Radio National. Donald Trump found enthusiastic cheerleaders not only in the American Midwest, but also in the historic heartland of Europe. He spawned these imitation movements across the continent. It was powered by a fear that Christian Europe was being lost to mass immigration. But the president's war on Iran and his aggressive foreign and trade policies are unnerving those European parties that were once allies. Thomas Farzi is a columnist for Unheard and Compact magazines, and he's been watching this relationship breakdown.
From a cultural, ideological standpoint, they have quite a lot in common. They share an opposition to, you know, the so-called woke culture, an opposition to mass migration, a rhetorical, at least, opposition to the quote-unquote globalist elites. And I think this is why a lot of parties on the right in Europe saw Trump as an almost natural ally. As I explained in a recent article that I wrote for Unheard, this is very, very short-sighted, I would say, for the long-term perspective of these parties. Yeah. And I think it really reveals the main contradiction at the heart of the European anti-establishment right or populist right, however you want to call it. And that's the fact that virtually all these parties, when it comes to foreign policy and geopolitics, so on issues like transatlantic relations, US-Europe relations, on the US's addiction to war and its growing list of aggressions against sovereign countries, and not just the US, also on Israel and Gaza, and now even on the war in Iran, these parties have views that in many cases are, I would say, barely distinguishable from the mainstream parties they oppose.
Yeah, and Thomas, we're going to put a link to that article not only in Unheard, but all of your work. How energetically, though, did the European nationalists and the so-called sovereigntists embrace Trump and the MAGA ideology?
Very strongly so. Most of these parties explicitly align themselves with Trump, with MAGA, explicitly endorsed Trump, and many of them even sought Trump's own endorsement for them. So, you know, a lot of these parties have very tight relations with the Trump movement, with the administration in some cases, with the wider MAGA movement. Some parties even embraced a European sort of version of MAGA, i.e. MEGA, Make Europe Great Again. So I think this signals what these parties feel is, yeah, an almost natural kinship between them, between these sovereigntists and or patriotic or national populist parties and Trump. This was very short-sighted because now we are seeing that this almost automatic alignment with Trump is coming back to bite them.
And this is the point of your most recent article in Unheard, Will Europe's Populists Dump Trump? Because what lessons, Thomas, are they now learning about Donald Trump?
I think it's not just a lesson about Donald Trump. It's also a lesson about the structural aspects of U.S. foreign policy, and especially of the U.S.'s historical stance towards Europe. I mean, most right populist parties in Europe today, they're not just pro-Trump. I would say they're pro-American and pro-Atlanticist. So they view this transatlantic relation as really a core aspect of their identity, of Europe's identity. But what this means is that, well, not only does this make them, as I was saying, almost indistinguishable on this issue from the mainstream parties that they're opposing, but it ultimately means that they're okay with Europe's structural subordination to Washington. So, you know, they criticized the Biden administration. Of course, they all hated Biden, but they opposed that administration and that president on most mainly cultural, ideological grounds, not because there was any fundamental disagreement on U.S. foreign policy or on the way the U.S. has historically viewed Europe as essentially an extension of its global empire, i.e. a region that had to be controlled politically, economically, and militarily, and essentially kept aligned with U.S. Interests. And now they support Trump for very much the same reason, as I was saying, because they see him as an ideological ally in their cultural war against the mainstream EU establishment, and he is. But this is also, it reveals a very big blind spot. And that, and I think, which in turn reveals the lack of geopolitical vision that these parties have, because the paradox is obvious. How can you claim to stand for national sovereignty? How can you claim to be a patriot, as these parties claim to be? How can you claim to be standing up for the rights of your countries, of your citizens, against the quote-unquote globalist elites, while at the same time expressing support for a country, the US, that essentially treats Europe as a province and systematically undermines Europe's core interests? I mean, the paradox, I think, is quite obvious and apparent. Equally paradoxical, I would say, is the fact that these parties all oppose the European Union, but they ignore the fact that the EU is historically one of the main tools that the US has used to control Europe. And, you know, suffice to look at how Ursula von der Leyen's European Commission has aligned Europe to the US's strategic imperatives on virtually every issue: foreign policy, defense, trade. And now the paradox is being made even more apparent by the fact that America's complete disregard for Europe's interests has become even more explicit than ever before, precisely under Trump, i.e. the ally of these, you know, sovereigntist and populist parties.
All that being said, though, I mean, one of the things that I found so fascinating about your piece, Thomas, was this, that this rift now is manifesting itself. Yes, these parties may have been supplicants to Trump in a way that they thought they never would be. But what, for example, are nationalists in Germany and in Britain now saying about, you know, the US and Israel's war on Iran, for example?
They have this underlying tension between the European right populists and Trump has been growing ever since Trump arrived in the White House, basically, because, you know, from day one, what has Trump done? He has launched an aggressive trade war against Europe. He's threatened to annex or even militarily invade part of its territory, i.e. Greenland. He has completely weaponized Europe's dependence on American gas now to extract political concessions. He's demanding that European countries that are already strapped for cash spend hundreds of billions of euros on U.S. weapons. Some tensions were already emerging there, especially with the whole Greenland issue. But now with the war on Iran, these contradictions have really are starting to come to the fore. The reason is obvious. I mean, Europe is paying a very, very hard price already for the US-Israeli war on Iran. Oil and gas prices are surging, and we know that Europe is already facing a severe crisis due to the increased price of energy in recent years, largely due to the war in Ukraine and the decoupling from Russian gas, something that was also happened under pressure from the US, which benefited from Europe's shift to American gas. But this is a war that undermines Europe's interests in every possible way. And this has to be said. I mean, despite all of this, most right populist parties have either remained silent about the war in Iran or even openly endorsed it. This is problematic in itself, but some rifts are starting to emerge now. As I explained in the article, this is happening most notably in Germany within the AfD, which has traditionally been quite mainstream on foreign policy, also very sort of pro-Trump, very MAGA aligned. The AfD is probably the European right-wing party that has been most openly endorsed by Trump and by, you know, people around him like Elon Musk. But that party has always also been divided between a sort of pro-MAGA, pro-American, pro-transatlantic, pro-Israeli faction and a more nationalist and Eurocentric faction, which has always been more sympathetic to Moscow, pretty hostile to U.S. foreign interventionism, and also quite critical of Germany's almost reflexive support for Israel. As a result of recent events, the Eurocentric faction of the party is becoming more and more influential. And I think that is evident, for example, in the fact that the AfD put out one of the most critical statements against the US-Israeli attack on Iran among all European parties, essentially saying this war is against German national interests. Inevitably, I think we will see more and more parties distance themselves from this war, and inevitably, I think, from Trump and from MAGA, especially if the war goes on.
You don't reference this specifically in the article, but I know that it's a great interest of yours. There is going to be a test of this soon with the election in Hungary. Now, Viktor Orban's government is very close to that of Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump has effectively endorsed Orban. Do you have a feeling as to how this affection for Donald Trump, open affection for Donald Trump by Orban might end up playing out in that election in just a few weeks?
I don't think it'll be a very relevant factor in the election. I think that election will be driven by much more domestic factors rather than Orban's relationship to Trump. But I think, yes, Hungary is another case where this contradiction might become more relevant to the domestic political scene as well. Hungary is facing serious energy disruptions. So, of course, energy is sort of a critical topic of debate in Hungary. And so inevitably, I mean, if we keep witnessing a growing pressure on energy prices, I think even such a staunch ally of Trump, like Orban, will probably be compelled at some point to maybe take a stronger stance, if not on Trump in general, but definitely, I think, on the issue of this war and the wider Middle Eastern tensions. And I think more in general, this points to the, I would say, also problematic from my standpoint, support that a lot of these parties have for, you know, the Netanyahu government. One can see why that might be the case from a cultural standpoint. A lot of these parties, you know, they are strongly opposed to mass immigration and especially kind of Muslim immigration. And so they feel a natural affinity to Israel, which they see as a bastion of Western culture in the Middle East. And you know, one can understand that. It still completely ignores the fact that one of the very likely consequences of these Middle Eastern tensions and these wars is an increase in migration flows to Europe. There's a clear contradiction here as well in, you know, these parties being both anti-immigration, but also pro a lot of these wars that caused the immigration flows in the first place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does strike me from your article that there is a model that maybe some of these European nationalists might look to. And the figure that you talk about, well, he wasn't a hardline ethno-nationalist. I don't think anything like that. But he was a centre-right figure who presided over, you know, a government with a strong welfare state, but he was very patriotic. What does de Gaulle's government actually model for people who are truly patriotic in Europe?
In the article, I pointed de Gaulle as a possible alternative model for these parties if they truly want to have a foreign policy stance that is aligned with their nationalist or patriotic values. De Gaulle in the 60s, as a French president, was very, very critical of what he saw as the American post-war domination of Western Europe under the guise of the quote-unquote Atlantic Alliance, i.e. NATO. He argued that this essentially reduced Europe to a province of the American Empire, that it undermined, you know, European sovereignty and the sovereignty of European states, and in fact went so far as to withdraw France from NATO's military structure, kicked out all the US forces that were positioned in France at the time. Any sort of nationalist party in Europe that wants to be credible and that wants to ensure its long-term political survival will have to develop a foreign policy more or less along these lines. If you want to seriously challenge the European liberal or globalist status quo, call it however you want, you can't limit yourself to domestic policies, you know, anti-immigration policies, or even cultural policies like anti-woke policies. You need to articulate a foreign policy that is coherent with Europe's fundamental core economic and geopolitical interests, which are not and are increasingly less so aligned with America's. And this inevitably means breaking with Washington, breaking with the kind of master-servant relationship that has always defined Europe-US relations, and it means breaking with America's foreign wars, most of which happen to occur on Europe's doorstep. But one might say that the same lesson applies to other client states of the US empire, such as Australia.
Thomas Farsi, he's a columnist with Unheard and Compact magazines. We'll put a link to Thomas's columns and his book. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.